Welcome to UEG Podcast, where we talk about scientific discoveries, educational insights, and professional development within the world of digestive health. Whether you're a clinician, researcher, or just passionate about GI content, this is the podcast for you.
Hello, everyone. My name is Agle, and I'm the host of UEG Talks, educational, hopefully fun dive into GI world and beyond. We are very happy to have you with us for another exciting episode. So today we're talking about GI heroines and how to make it as a woman. I'm incredibly excited to introduce today's guest, true forces of nature in GI world, hardcore endoscopist, brilliant scientist, and all in all a picture of who I would like to be when I grow up, Professor Janine Van Hooft from Netherlands and Professor Mariana Arvanitakis from Belgium. Welcome to UG Talks.
Hello.
Hello there.
We're very, very happy to have you with us and to hear your insights about how to make it as a woman in GI world. So let's dive in. You have both reached incredible peaks in your careers in a historically male-dominated field. Do you think that there's still an issue of discrimination?
Yes, I think there's still a way to go. And I think discrimination is broader than only male-female. It's diversity in general. And if I, for example, look at my university, we actually today got the numbers and my university went down to the lowest ranking in the Netherlands. That's number 7. And we have 20% female professors at our hospital, which is actually at our university in general. So that is, to me, still strikingly low, while I think our population is 50% female.
That's very sad. Mariana, do you have to add something to this?
Well, we are a bit in similar profile in Belgium, and this is not the worst situation, I think. Things have been changing, but as Janine pointed out, it's not only gender, it's also geographic, it's also cultural, it's also physical disability, optimizing how we treat people and the chances we give to people. I think it's still a challenge. And if you see that in some countries, like in the US, there's still also a difference in payment in GI colleagues, and that females get paid less in some centers, I think it's quite shocking. So I think there's still things to be done.
Okay, so data doesn't lie, it glares at us, and it's quite upsetting. So why do you think that gender still plays a role in professional fields? I mean, other characteristics should not affect your work performance. And what would you like your male colleagues to understand about your experience at work?
So I consider myself lucky enough to be in an environment I was encouraged and pushed forward. And that was because I had a mentor that believed in me and at least gave me the chances to go forward. So not everybody, of course, had my chance. And I think that there are a lot of situations where still, if you're a female and want to do therapeutic endoscopy, it's still considered a male world. And we published a questionnaire that we had sent around with my PhD student, Sara Campos, which was published, where we tried to see the previous experiences of GI endoscopies that arrived at a level of master. And there were some females that answered this questionnaire. And there were a lot of experience about disbelief from their male colleagues when they started their career, that how would they make it in this world. So things are changing, that's for sure, but still there's some well-rooted beliefs which are still present that can be even worse, for example, in the surgical world as well. These strong beliefs are in some areas of medicine, but therapeutic endoscopy is one of them.
Yeah, and if I may add, I think there's also difference in how you coach the people. In my experience, especially the females need much more to be said that they really can do it, that they are good. They need more confirmation. In my opinion, most of the guys, if you say that they score 7 out of 10, they're completely happy and they think they are the next masters. And if you tell the ladies it's an 8 out of 10, they say, oh, gosh, I'm still missing 2 points. And I think also there we have to keep stimulating them and say both ways are fine and good.
Yeah, a bit more confidence could be also useful. That's true.
And also perfectionism that we did in our prequel. Perfectionism may not be our best friend sometimes.
Yeah, completely. That's what we were talking about, that sometimes you will lose when you try to go from 85% of good to perfect 100%, which the 85% is really quite excellent. And then you lose time, you lose your energy, you lose confidence.
And you get this bleed, eh? You get this bleed, don't forget.
Yeah, yes. Basically, it's the same. So I think this is something in female characters sometimes that we have this. And I think that just things can be very well also at 85%.
Good enough is sometimes perfect, right?
The good enough is the next perfect. I don't say that you're not going to strive for the best. It's excellence is one of our values here, but it depends also what your object is. If you want to treat a patient, of course, you're going to go for the 100%. If you want to do something that's a bit less important, I mean, 85% is good, and you can ask for some help if it's going to mean that you're going to do something else which is more important in a better way.
Okay, so we also might be contributing a little bit with our characteristics to the problem. We need to gain some more confidence to go for it, right?
Yeah, and I think also if you teach, you have to be aware of it, that there is a difference. So you might also, as an educator, approach that differently. And I think that's where the change has to come from, that we now, as teachers, are aware of those differences and try to coach the trainees differently.
How do you do that? How do you do it? How do you approach differently? Do you give more encouragement?
Yeah, it is often in small things. I think many females, if you say something very direct, as people might know, I can be very direct, they might be a bit offended. And I think females have that more than males. So I try to take notice of that. If I want to explain that something has to be done different, I try to be less direct if I have a female trainee than if I have a guy. They handle it different. So I try to adjust. And by the way, you have also guys that are very sensitive. So I would say in general, you try to fine tune it to the person you're specifically training at that moment.
I would say also you can use humor in a way to make it educational, but to make it a bit more lighter if you have to point out something. But at the same time, you try to also empower them and give them, to point out what was good about what the performance and what they've gained during their training. So if it's balanced enough and tailor-made for, as you said, Janine, to the person you're talking to, according to his traits, his character traits, I think you can also go, as an educator, really give the best for the learning curve to be also tailor-made for everybody.
Oh my God, that sounds like a lot of things to bear in mind for an educator when doing a complex procedure, then think of how to best teach the person at hand. Exhausting.
I have to be patient.
Yeah, and I also wonder, is it exhausting? I think it's also something you have to like. I have to say, I always miss if I don't have a fellow and think, oh, would be so nice to have somebody with me during this procedure to try to give them the education they deserve. And yes, if I'm on my own, I might be faster, but it's half the fun.
That's true. That's true. The satisfaction at the end of the day is also if one of your fellows did something new with you. So it's one of the highlights of the day.
Okay. So you reach the peaks of joy when you share it with someone.
Yeah. Happiness is real only when shared.
Ah. And regarding the fastness, then if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far away, go with someone.
Yeah, nice.
Okay, so we talked about the statistics. 20% of women in Leiden, right, professors in your institution, it's horrible. And even looking at some societies' governing boards, let's see, the view is quite homogenous. With numbers glaring at us, there are many initiatives being taken to address that, from gender balance policies to female mentoring programs. In your mind, what's the best way? I mean, do we teach, we educate the males, or do we empower women? What's the best way, or do we combine and do it all together simultaneously? Mariana.
I will go for female empowerment, because that's where it comes from. It's really the source is there. So I think one of the problems is that sometimes, as we talked about the lack of confidence, a woman will go until the first steps and then she will get a bit of confidence, but she will really think, do the checklist many times before taking the decision to go for the last step, which is professorship, head of department, president of a society, executive committee of a society. So it's, again, it's perfectionism and a bit of lack of confidence. So if we overcome that, if we empower, I think that's the first step. And trying to give some positive discrimination, as many societies are doing now, I think it's a good step, because It's like when you're on a boat and you have already a speed that's going on. To reverse the speed, but you have to reverse the speed. You have to put it really in the other direction. So I think you need a little bit of that to get a one point balance.
I think we have to empower indeed the female, but we also have to learn them for which jobs they should go and should not go. I think ladies are very good in entering into this kind of non-promotional task. So if somebody is asking who's going to organize the party or who's going to make the next schedule for whatsoever, it appears that most of the times the females will take up this kind of task and the guys will lean back and wait for the opportunity to be asked for, you know, a leading kind of position in a committee, and they have then time for that. While we are completely drawn in all kind of little tasks that might not even be seen and miss out the important jobs.
So prioritization.
Okay, so you also need to be free at the right time, at the right place to get the opportunity. Not to be swamped in meaningless things that will not get you far away.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so coming from very systemic things, I was wondering, you've had a lot of experience in this world. I was wondering, how do you personally deal with sexism? From thinly veiled comments like being called a princess to your chief, denying learning ERCP for having obligation to bear children? How is it in those small details? Sometimes small, sometimes very, very painful and big ones that will forsake you, your career, and will close doors for you. Janine?
Yeah, I have to say, what happens to me often is that I only realize afterwards, you know, this kind of remarks. It doesn't matter that we talk this kind of sexism. Janine can handle it. And I mean, you do not stop there, you just continue. And then later on you think, this was actually a bit of an awkward remark. So often I'm not sharp enough there. At the other hand, then I wonder, how much does it hurt me? No, at that moment, it did not really. We have, I think, at the moment, all around us, lots of this kind of Me Too issues. And of course, if you think back, you think, this was maybe a bit, you know, on the edge, but at that moment, I just didn't realize, I just didn't take action. And I think also with that, it didn't meant that much to me.
Okay, so you let it slide and it doesn't affect you that much, right?
Yeah, and I probably also let it slide because I just don't realize.
Mariana, what about your experience?
But as you said, it depends on the degree of severity. You might have something that's like, you're a princess, and then you can go back and, you know, laugh and say, yeah, but I'm proud to be a princess, huh? And I'm a, you know, I'm a darn good princess when I do ERCP or something like that. You can also, again, respond with humor. But if it's something more troublesome, something that requires maybe getting in more into it, probably then you won't be a reactive, as Janine says. You won't talk back, and it will kind of like linger inside of you. And then it's something that you have to do something a bit more later on, even if you didn't react immediately. If it's something, I mean, there are stories that are a bit more, you know, have more importance and more impact in a career than just, you know, words. You have to differentiate between them because if it's, you cannot react negatively to everything and write letters or emails to everything either. It's just, you're spending too much time on doing things that are not very productive. But I think you have to really differentiate between things that are important, things that are just, yeah, I can answer back and yeah, so what?
Do you think that it's important to put those even small things on notice at that time, just for the people to be aware that they're doing something uncomfortable to you? For instance, saying that I'm not a princess, I'm a queen and a darn good endoscopist.
Yeah, exactly. That's also, yeah, I think that you can point it out, make it funny. It's said, it's underlined, and, you know, it might not be repeated.
Okay. So you already mentioned a little bit of this, but one of the measures taken to assure gender equality are quotas or official demands to have 50-50 gender composition. And do you think that this could forsake meritocracy for artificial inequality and actually perpetuate reverse sexism?
Yeah, I always struggled a bit with this kind of quotums. Do we have to do it? Should we not do it? First, I thought we should not, because there are enough capable ladies around and the world is going to change anyway. But now, after being in this field for a bit longer, I think a quotum does matter. So I tend to say at least 1/3 in all kinds of committees should be females. And of course, you might argue it should be 50%, and in the end, it should be 50%. But I think we should start with something realistic. And for me, it's already very important that we have role models, so that there are females in all kinds of teams, and that the young generation can see, yes, we can do it too. And then I have trust that in the end, we will get to 50-50. But now forcing a 50-50, that's not what I would suggest. At least 1/3 I would go for.
Okay, Mariana?
Yeah, I agree that you need a little bit of positive discrimination. I mean, it's difficult to change things. If you just let it go, it will take a longer time. And now we can see, at least the UEG already has been doing that for some time now, and you can see that there's a lot of female GIs, researchers, speakers for the UEG week that have come forward, and we have discovered these people. And this would not have been the case if we just go on the same people, put them in the same sessions as we did 10, 15 years before. So we can see the fruit of this. And I think the UEG was one of the first ones to do it, the GI societies. And I think that made a difference without necessarily putting the male colleagues in a difficult position. So sometimes, yes, it might be more difficult now for a young male to go forward, but it's a choice to be made. And I think that if we want to reach equity, that's a bit how we have to go now.
It also, males have been in power for centuries. Maybe it's time to take a little bit of the back seat.
Yeah, that's also...
That's sometimes difficult to say to the current generation, but I fully agree. I mean, I think talented ladies have been put aside for about at least 100 years. And, you know, we have to catch up a bit. So, yeah, those guys suffer now a bit for what the ladies suffered about in the past tense. But it's difficult. And of course, also talented guys, you would wish that they could get everything, but we have to choose at the moment.
Okay. So we are in agreement. Right now, it's time to make way for some talented ladies to make it on the scene. So we talked about the programs, how we do it as a society, but how can we help each other as women? I mean, sometimes the competition gets really tough and we start to compete against each other. How do we push forward together and encourage each other? Mariana?
Well, already the mentorship programs that you mentioned to earlier, which are being now proposed by societies, by Women in Endoscopy, we have a very nice mentoring program also within the ESG. It's Maria Pelissa that's taking care of this. And I think this is very, very strong actions to not only empower young GI, female GIs, but also to make a network around them and to give them some autonomy to continue on their own once this mentorship period has finished, and to be able to do what they want to do their advanced endoscopy training, to do their clinical research, and to feel that they can go on with the support of people from this network.
And if I may add, I think there also it's important that people like Mariana and I are connected, and we have quite a bunch of ladies around us, which we can, you know, reflect, also talk about cases, about situations. So you have peers who listen to you, who support you, who get you to the next level. And I think also for us, at least if I speak for myself, that the female networks we have at the moment are helping me really on a daily basis to get the next step, to keep moving. It's really of value.
It's a simple story that we lived together with Janina. We had the first all-women faculty meeting that was organized by Nagired in Hyderabad in February 2023. Yeah. And we met such fantastic colleagues that became friends during this meeting. And it was such a nice atmosphere, Janine, you remember, huh? You know, everybody was helping out each other. Was no competition. There was only good vibes. And it was like a dream live meeting. Everything went well. And we had the WhatsApp group and we kept it. And we just, you know, we get these encouragements and congrats. And it's really a good feel, WhatsApp group. And we meet during the meetings around, and it stayed. So this is, even on our level, it's companionship, it's going forward, it's networking, it's keeping in touch, it's really helping.
So we basically have to be each other's keepers if you want to go forward.
Yeah.
Okay, so you personally, do you have any inspirations, female idols? What keeps you going when things get really tough? Jeanine, I know you have an idol.
It's Eleanor Roosevelt. Eleanor Roosevelt always proposed for self deployment to get further, to keep being interested in everything. And so I think about those kind of people. I read books, I listen to my friends, and I think they all inspire me and get me going. Though sometimes it's lonely, and I think also there you have to be aware that you need reflection time. And I think it's not wrong to sometimes feel a bit lonely and on a tough road. I think also in the end, the tough roads give the most perfect and nicest views. It's like hiking. If you're climbing, you sometimes think by yourself, oh gosh, why am I doing this? And if you reach the peak, you think, okay, now I know why I'm doing this. This is beautiful.
Very inspiring. And Mariana, do you have any idols, inspirations?
Well, my mother was an inspiration. She was a pediatrician and she was in the States coming from Greece. So it was a difficult time when they did their training and they started working. So she managed to go up the steps and become a full professor in Greece and become the chief of the department and organize the European pediatric congresses. And so I think she was one of my first role models. And then I trained with Jacques Devière and Myriam Delay. Myriam Delay was my other mentor. She was one of the very few women in ERCP at that time. And she really got through it in her way. And she offered me a lot of good advice about letting it, you know, slide and just being there, enduring everything and just going through and, you know, never letting go. We're not exactly the same character, but she taught me a lot. So there's other inspirations, of course, through the books, the films, the music, but this is my two life inspirations.
Okay, so now that you have your idols, your inspirations, but what about inspiration to others? Do you have any advice for a woman struggling in professional world, Jeanine?
Stay yourself. Stay really close to yourself. Listen to your heart. Find the right people in your surroundings with who you can reflect. And you might be critical to yourself, but don't doubt yourself.
Okay. Mariana.
Every day, try to find three good things that you do today. Every day. And repeat those at the end of the day. I have three good things. I did this and this and this. And try to keep confident. And sometimes it's a bit difficult. So that's why these three good things that you did in a day means that you're keeping the confidence up. And keep your values. Stay with your values.
So your advice, this, you know, some people want to be grateful every day and see what's good happened to them. But your advice is to think of what you did well.
Yes.
And be proud of yourself. And
exactly.
Great. I will try to do it tomorrow. And today, I think we all did very well. At least one thing is today's podcast. I'm very, very thankful. This was a lot of fun, a lot of inspiration and push forward. And I hope this will do the same for our listeners. Thank you, Mariana. Thank you, Jeanine.
Thank you very much for having it.
And thank you to our listeners. And we will see you in the next episode. Ciao, ciao.
Thanks for listening to UEG Podcast. We hope you've found some new ideas, insights, and inspiration to take with you. Don't forget to subscribe. And if you like our content, please leave us a review and share our podcast with your colleagues.